Do you want to do more than follow orders? Think outside of the box and manifest your dreams? Then you've come to the right show. Welcome to the award-winning podcast, Holding Down the Fort by U.S. VetWealth. I'm your host, Jen Amos, a Gold Star daughter, veteran spouse, and entrepreneur. For season 8, we continue our wonderful partnership with the Rosie Network to highlight motivational stories of personal growth, financial awareness, and autonomy in our military community. We're also excited to showcase our partnership with Blue Water Advisors. Well, we have a lot in store for you this season, so let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode here at Holding Down the Fort. Take a moment to reflect on a past major life transition. How have you navigated the shift from one major life chapter to another? And what lessons have you learned along the way? For Chef Jimmy Francis, he reflects on the parallels between his military service and his current career, such as the importance of preparation and organization. After retiring from the U.S. Air Force in 2014, little did Jimmy know that his deployments to various countries could influence his cooking style and new career as a chef. He shares his journey from starting a meal delivery company with his sister to his passion for cooking directly for clients, leading him to start his own business, Flights by Jimmy. Overall, Chef Jimmy's shift from military life to culinary arts highlights how military retirees can find a sense of purpose in post-military. Jimmy, it was a pleasure having you on our show. This is episode 180. If anyone wants to look up Chef Jimmy as you're listening to this conversation, you can either check the show notes of this podcast episode in your preferred podcasting platform, or you can go visit the website holdingdownthefortpodcast.com, do a search of episode 180, and you'll find Chef Jimmy's episode and his contact information, how to find his website, his social media, et cetera, et cetera. Jimmy, it was a pleasure interviewing you. And to our listeners or viewers today, because this episode is available via podcast and YouTube, we hope that you'll get a lot out of this conversation. Once again, this is Chef Jimmy Francis's Culinary Flight, a journey from Air Force pilot to private chef. Enjoy. All right, everyone, welcome back. Happy New Year. So excited to kick off the spring season of Holding Down the Fort here in 2024 with Chef Jimmy Francis. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Jen. I am excited to be here and can't wait to share my story.
Yes, I wanted to open up with just getting a snapshot of your life today. And more importantly, I was just looking at my notes and I realized that you retired from the Air Force in 2014. So 2024 must mark your 10-year anniversary since you retired. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. We're coming up on 10 years. I've had a lot of different changes since I retired. And it was kind of hard to retire, actually, to leave all that behind. But eventually, after about 3 years, I was able to, like I've said before, put that in a little box with a bow and put that up on a shelf and emotionally move on from that. I'll never forget my service and all the men and women that I worked with and the places I went. But yeah, I've definitely moved on to the next chapter.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And, you know, one of the major themes of our show here at Holding Down the Fort is thinking outside the box. And what you did was you pretty much put your service, your 20-year service in a box so that you could mentally, you know, I would say open a new box, right? Open a new box of possibilities.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely for sure. And I was a Air Force pilot, so I definitely was not on the ground in a hostile environment very much. And so I like to say that I was a lot more stable than I could have been when I retired. And I haven't had a lot of emotional problems from it, from service, you know, traumatic stress or things like that. But I imagine that a lot of people do. And I'm very grateful for not having that.
Yeah, absolutely. My husband was actually a West Point grad and a combat army officer. And during his service, similar to you, he never really experienced what he would consider traumatic. And so in a weird way, he has like a sense of guilt around that. I don't even think you can call it survivor's guilt, but it's just like the sense of guilt of like, oh, I did not, you know, experience what some of my soldiers went through, so to speak. And so I think it's great for you to, you know, acknowledge that and like, and be grateful, because of course there's not as many people, or I mean, I think nowadays you can, you know, kind of go through the military life with like a, like where it feels like a standard job, so to speak. But to recognize that you didn't necessarily have to go through anything necessarily traumatic, I think is a good thing to be self-aware about and grateful for.
Yes, definitely very, very grateful for that. I did go to some humanitarian assistance missions, like in the Philippines. Hurricane Yolanda was there while we were deployed, and we responded to that. And that was probably the closest thing that I've come to having some traumatic stress that I experienced. But otherwise, I'm just very proud of my service and very proud of all the men and women that I work with.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know in part of your service, Jimmy, because you were traveling a lot, you dealt with a lot of foreign advisors and you were exposed to, I would say, a lot of foreign cuisine. And I know that kind of led to where you're at today. So tell us about, you know, part of that experience that led to where you're at today as a chef.
Well, at the very beginning, I grew up with my mom, and she was a great cook, learned from her mom. And so I kind of got the passion for cooking with her growing up in high school. And then went to the Air Force Academy, didn't cook at all then. And then finally, when I graduated and became a lieutenant, I got to start cooking again and had a great time doing that. Basically, through my whole career, I didn't get married until the later part of my career, but definitely cooked for myself and friends. And then when I started deploying as a foreign advisor, we'd actually live with foreign forces for anywhere from a month up to 6 months at a time. And we would eat their food. We would immerse in their culture. We'd try to create as good a relationship as you could with them so they would trust us and we could influence their way of fighting as an ally. And whether it was in Poland, learning about like cabbage rolls and galopki, or going to Mauritania and learning how to cook goat. And then in the Philippines, ate a lot of great food there, of course. And I actually experienced one of the hardest things in cooking that I did, that I have in the Philippines. And that was, we were with the Hawaiian National Guard. They were providing ground security. And they came to me as a, I think I was a major at the time. And they said, hey, sir, as the ranking officer, you get to slaughter the pig for a pig roast.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'd never done that before. The most thing I had killed was maybe a salmon.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Or a duck. Yeah. So they handed me this big, I don't know, as long as a foot long blade. And they were holding the pig down and they're just like, okay, just put the blade right there. And
oh,
I did
God.
That. And I'll never forget that experience for sure. But one of my mantras is if you're willing to eat the food and you enjoy eating the food, kind of have to be willing to harvest the food. So whether it's, you know, hitting a salmon over the head with a stick before you fillet it, or a duck or a pig.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not really a hunter anymore, but if I had to, I feel like I should do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just like, I'm trying to like not laugh out loud right now in hearing your story about the pig, because I come from a family of farmers in the Philippines. And I remember decade plus ago, we had like a family reunion and we went to my mom's land and, you know, they have pigs there. And they decided for dinner, they were going to serve pig, or they were going to serve lechon, which is like a roasted pig. And they put an apple in the mouth and everything. So I'm sure you're probably familiar of it at this point. But I saw the, like, Jimmy, I saw the whole process. I was like a teenager. Okay. I saw the whole process of how they like slaughtered the pig. Okay. And it started with, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I want to get back into it, but basically it started with a metal bat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It was brutal. I watched everything from them getting it like unconscious to, you know, gutting it, everything. I'm not going to get into full details here, but it was just so, so interesting how you share that story, because that brings me back to my teenage years. And I've never slaughtered anything, you know, but like you said, it gets you to really appreciate like what you're eating. And even growing up when, my family, we were like stationed in San Diego for a couple of years, and my dad and my mom were so used to like growing up with chickens. So we would have chickens in the backyard, and I would watch him cut the chicken's head off. and you know, the whole truth of like headless chickens, like running around like headless chickens, is so true. Like the chickens are still alive. It's the craziest thing. So anyway, you just get me to reminisce on, you know, those stories like in my upbringing. But I know for you, Jimmy, that part of why you enjoy cooking is learning from other people who cook well, especially with different, you know, different cuisines from different cultures and learning the stories behind that. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I experienced that this summer, which is nice because I'm not deploying anymore. I'm not living with foreign forces and eating their food. I have to spend the money now to travel, which definitely is not as often. But my family and I were very fortunate to go to Spain this summer, and we met up with some friends that live there. And I learned to cook paella from the grandfather of the family. And I've cooked paella before many times, just strictly from a cookbook. And he did it way different than I had learned in the cookbook. So it was really nice to cook it his way. I would think more traditional. And that's now how I cook it also. Neither of us spoke the other's language very well. So we were translating with our iPhones back and forth, and it worked great, actually.
That's awesome. I think nowadays Google Translate works really well. And I think there's apps now where you can, you know, speak in a different language and then it'll interpret it. So it's just amazing how technology has come a long way and, you know, really is able to make the world a little smaller. But I know that with food, it's more about like showing the process rather than talking about it, right?
Yep, for sure. And he had done some prep before I arrived. So he explained that part, of course. And yeah, no, it was a really cool experience. And one of the funny things that happened was he added an orange powder to the paella. And he said that was strictly for coloring. And after the fact, I learned that if you couldn't afford saffron, which can be quite expensive, you would have a little bit of saffron and then a lot of this orange coloring. So I thought that was essential. And I actually bought some in Spain, brought it home. And as I'm cooking with it, I just kind of casually glance at the back at the ingredients. And it sure enough, it had some of those dyes in it that aren't necessarily condoned anymore. Oh. So I strictly try to use saffron now and avoid the dyes for sure as much as I can. But the saffron will make it taste much better. You just got to spend a little bit.
Yeah, I think that is the benefit of cooking your own food, right? Is like you know exactly what's being put in your food versus maybe just getting something from the store, getting like that rotisserie at Costco or whatever. Like it's like you know exactly what's in your food. And in the last handful of years, I just get like local produce delivered to my house. But even then, I still feel like when I do want to get, let's say, like even just chocolate milk almonds, I have to like read the ingredients and there's only so much I understand. Like there's so many, like I've heard before a good rule of thumb with ingredients is if you can't pronounce it, it's probably a bad ingredient. That's what I was told.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm curious if like, I mean, I know that you do account nutrition into making food, but I'm curious if that's like something you also pay attention to is like the quality of the ingredients you use.
Probably this. Where the food is from is the most important to me. Mm-hmm. Being in San Diego, there's a great produce vendor in Old Town called Specialty Produce. Mm-hmm. And you can almost get anything all year round there. They source from Baja in the southwest states of the U.S., which to me is fairly local. But then also their seasonal produce is just incredible. So I'll usually talk, you know, when I have a big event, I'll talk to their produce manager or their organic manager. They also have a farmer's market manager, which is even more niche and more expensive. And they'll tell me, oh, what's really good right now? Either these tomatoes, you know, in the summertime or strawberries. They have truffles a certain time of the year. I think that's in the late spring is when truffles come out. So it's definitely a seasonal thing with produce. And then with seafood, it can be also the same. There's a tuna season. There's a lobster season locally here in the fall in San Diego. And when you go to your local markets, definitely ask them where their food is from. Like it could be farmed shrimp or farmed fish that's brought in from overseas. And you can kind of definitely smell the difference between that and then a local harvested fish. And so I very rarely anymore get food from or fish from overseas. You pay for it, but hopefully the client will help pay for it too.
Right. Yeah. And I think that what I've come to find just eating local seasonal food is that it just tastes better. For the holiday season, the CSA program that we order from took 2 weeks off, you know, to just get ready for the new year. And so it was kind of like, it was kind of the first time in the year I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the grocery store and just, you know, get my veggies there. And again, it just doesn't taste the same in my opinion. Like I got cauliflower and it doesn't taste like anything. And I even got asparagus and you know, unless I overseason it, it doesn't taste like anything, at least in my opinion. Maybe I just have a different palate now, just eating local and seasonal. But I really like how you ask the questions. You know, you're intentionally asking, like, where is this from? How is it raised? Because I'm, you know, I imagine that makes all the difference in the quality of food that you select.
It absolutely does. And like I said, nothing more obvious than when it comes to seafood. I feel a little, I'm not sure the word pretentious, maybe, or high maintenance when I ask the butcher or the fishmonger, hey, where is this from? Where, you know, how is it raised? Was it happy its whole life? You know,
I was going to ask you if it felt like you're pretentious asking those questions.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's really worth it to know kind of where your food comes from. How far did it have to travel?
Yeah.
Are they tomatoes that came, you know, from Texas? And so they're more fibrous and more designed for travel than for flavor, mm-hmm. right? So you want to get local tomatoes in the summer pretty much that are going to be a lot softer, a lot more fragile, but the flavor is going to be amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I could talk a lot about food and where you get it and the health benefits and yeah, why that's important. And sometimes my clients don't care about any of that. Mm-hmm. They just want to save money, I guess, on the evening. And so I'll do my best to educate.
Yeah.
In that department. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe they don't ask is because they trust you. You know, they probably trust like that you do all the research ahead of time.
Right. Right. Yep. No, absolutely. And some clients really do care, you know, so I'm glad that I'm learning the background.
Yeah.
And learning how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back, not really 10 years ago, but like, let's say 3 years into post-military life and you were finding yourself and you weren't exactly sure what you're going to do. And then, you know, and realizing that you have this, not realizing what you wanted to do. I know that you and your wife wanted to start a family. It made a lot of sense to be with the kids, but you also wanted to have, you know, a sense of purpose, a creative outlet. And flying wasn't going to be that thing for you. So hence, you and your sister were able to start Wholesome Kitchen SD. Is that correct?
Yeah, we created that back in 2016. We were both raising our young kids. My spouse was traveling quite a bit and her husband is a teacher. But then as our kids got a little bit older, we realized we had some time and then we'd get back more fully into the job market. So we started Wholesome Kitchen San Diego, which is an organic meal delivery company. We'd cook twice a week in a commercial kitchen. You have to pay rent in a commercial kitchen, of course. And then the next morning we would have drivers that would deliver the food. And we did that for about 2 years. And I think in the end, my sister's passion was being a doula, so helping with childbirth for clients. Mm-hmm. And then mine was more cooking in front of and with clients because it was kind of it was almost like a leftover food delivery. Like the food was cold at that point and refrigerated all night. And then we delivered it the next day. So it wasn't quite the front-facing client interaction that I was looking for with my cooking. So we shut that down after a couple of years. And then a few years later, I started Flights by Jimmy.
Yeah.
Or 2 years later.
I'm curious to know what it was like starting a business with your sister. Cause I work with my husband and it's taken us a number of years to, you know, get along or to at least like know how to be a team. But I imagine like with siblings, it might be a different, if not similar experience, like trying to run a business together.
So I'm actually really close to my sister. I have four of them. My sister, Leah is, I'm the second child and my sister, Leah, is third. And she lives here in San Diego with her husband and her daughter, Stella. And I think she actually proposed the idea to me. And we thought about it and, you know, talked about how it would work and what the schedule would be like and how we could support our families also. And then we decided to do it. And honestly, working with her was pretty good. She had a part-time job as a doula. And obviously I had part-time requirements with my family. And we were able to share a lot of things. I was kind of the lead chef and she was more marketing. So sharing those duties worked out pretty well because that's something that I'm weak at, I guess, is, and maybe we could talk about that later, is the marketing side of things. But the cooking, I got that covered. So she was a prep cook in the kitchen. We had two or three other people in there working with us as prep cooks. And then she took care of the marketing. And it all went really relatively smoothly until about 2 years in, she started to say, hey, you know, I'm not making enough. It'd be a lot better if I just went full-time doula. And then so that at that point, we decided to shut it down. And it was funny, just a quick story. We went to see a mentor downtown, a business mentor at the SCORE Network. And we were talking about our business and what we were doing and how we were doing it and, you know, the elevator speech, all of that. And he basically asked us, this much older business gentleman, he said, okay, so which one of you is in charge of the company? And we both looked at each other and we didn't have a solid answer. And he's like, that is your number one problem. Being equal business partners and being siblings, it can be difficult. So he said, so one of you needs to take charge. And Leah kind of looked at me and was, and she said, basically, well, I don't want to do it. And I said, and me, I was thinking, well, I do want to do it because I don't want to, you know, I would like to have influence, you know, of course. So that even worked out too between us that I ended up creating the LLC and all the business paperwork had my name on it. And so that even worked out between us. So it went really pretty well.
Yeah, that's great to hear. It sounds like it was just like two puzzle pieces that connected perfectly. Like you two had your strengths and where one person had blind spots, the other person was able to fill it in. And it was really just a matter of circumstances. Like, you know, your sister wanted to make more income, so she felt like it made sense to become a doula. But it sounds to me that that was just like a great experience for you to like dip your feet into entrepreneurship. From what I recall, I think you also got involved with the Rosie Network and they were able to help you with the process of running that business.
Absolutely. I did their service to CEO program, which is kind of like boots to business. It was maybe a 4 month program. Actually, it might have been eight. Anyway, it was several months and you would meet a couple times a month and down at their offices and their classrooms, and they would have a major topic every month to talk about, whether it was your business plan or marketing or the money side of things or business development. Yeah, stuff. It was very helpful.
Well, awesome. That's really great to hear. You know, the only reason why this conversation exists is because the Rosie Network recommended you as a guest for a show. So I just want to give a quick shout out to the Rosie Network for that. And, you know, also my husband was one of the early cohort members when they started, I think, when they started the program back in, I don't know, 2016 or 2017. So it's just really cool to see throughout the years, you know, how the nonprofit continues to serve military connected entrepreneurs and getting their feet off the ground, even if it's just like those initial steps to lead them to somewhere. Because I also know that getting help from SCORE is also really helpful. I know that they provide a ton of, you know, business resources.
Yeah, no, I appreciate both those organizations. And I still, you know, Rosie still reaches out to me today for various things, whether it's, you know, if I need help with mentorship or further business development, or they have an opportunity for me. So I'm very grateful to everyone over at Rosie.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little more about mindset with you, because in the military lifestyle, it's often considered like the culture of like following orders. And I know that like you have been, you know, removed from the military for, you know, a decade now. And I'm curious, like, in addition to what we talked about early on, where you put kind of your Air Force hat and memories and experiences in a box and put it on a shelf, I'm curious if there's anything else that you felt like you went through, like your experiences to make that mental shift from the military life to the civilian life.
So in Air Force Special Operations, someone above my pay grade, so to speak, would choose the mission, like where we were going, because they were an ally of the U.S.
Okay.
They would probably have a good idea of what kind of influence they wanted us to have, you know, on their aviation and on their ground support, on their medical abilities. But then our team or our experience, we would influence our leadership as to, you know, what the right way to go was. So yeah, it was definitely following orders. They would decide where we were going, but then we would build the plan. We would build the mission, how we're going to do it, how many people are going, how long. And then we do tons of research. How safe is it there? What are the threats? What are the chances of us being able to provide a longstanding capability at this country? So we definitely were the experts in that realm as a combat aviation advisor. And so I kind of learned, you know, maybe I didn't necessarily decide where we were going or what the mission was, but I definitely knew how to build that plan. So that directly transfers. Mm-hmm. You know, culture kind of decides in the U.S. what people like to eat and where you live traditionally. But then I will kind of build based off of that or those inputs, what the meal plan is going to be or the business plan. Like we had these great checklists that we would use as aviation advisors just to get out the door. And they were like, it would start 12 months out and then 6 month checklist and then a 1 month checklist. And then all the way down to that day checklist to get out the door to make sure you didn't forget anything and you got all the steps done. So I even built that when I started this business. I had maybe even with Rosie's help, but like a 6 month plan, you know, what permits do I have to get? How much money do I need to get those permits? What's going to be my budget? And then a 2-month plan and then 1 month. And finally, you get the permits. And so now you're ready to open. So you got to create a contract with the commercial kitchen that starts at first of the month. So yeah, a lot of that stuff that I did in the military absolutely transferred to what I'm doing now, as far as like the structure of it goes.
Yeah. Forgive me. I feel like I should have couched that question differently. I should have said, you know, how did it translate, as you said, because being in an advisor role, it makes a lot of sense that you had to do all that research. And what we talked about offline, about one of the things that excites you most about being a chef is the process of the meal prepping and all that. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, absolutely true. I really enjoy when my theater of operations, the kitchen, is sparkling clean, just cleaned, sanitized, and all I have is a cookbook or one sheet of paper that has the recipe on it. And then from there, it's go time and I prepare the meal. And the same, you know, was in the military. You wanted everything to be very well organized. You wanted your team on the same page. You wanted to have all the equipment ready to go, whether that was an aircraft being checked out by maintenance and given a thumbs up, or just a vehicle convoy and having all the cars start.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's all the prep. And once all the prep is done, then it's time to cook the food. And that's really my favorite part, when everything's well prepped.
Yeah, I hear the love and passion you have for that process. And it actually gets me to think about the dynamic you had with your sister, where she was more of the marketer. So now Flights by Jimmy, what is that experience like for you to market yourself?
Honestly, Jen, that it's hard. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can find a reason not to pick up my phone, I generally do that. So it's, you know, now within 10 pictures, I have to pick up my phone and go to Instagram and, you know, put pictures in there and talk about those pictures, you know, talk about me. That's hard. And then put links in there or tag people that I've worked with for that dinner, whether it's, you know, specialty produce or my wine supplier or things like that. My wife knows how important it is. In fact, every other person in the world, including me, knows how important marketing on social media is. So they're constantly motivating me to do that and giving me kudos if I do one, and, you know, give me critiques also, which isn't always the hardest thing for me, from your family. That's a skill for sure. But yeah, the marketing is hard and I'm kind of inconsistent with it. But there was an organization that worked with Rosie that helped me with that last year. They made a video for me that I was able to post that was really nice, with music and edits and the whole thing. Mostly my business has grown from word of mouth, but I think that there's always room to like spread that reach. And usually social media or marketing is how you do that. But yeah, word of mouth is kind of my main success point for marketing. And that's all kind of based where I live. And then it kind of goes out from there. I've also done a few dinners that were auctioned at a fundraising event. So I just did one where the clients went to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Gala and they bid on my dinner. My kids' elementary school have an event every year where they auction off on my dinners. And then Rady's Children's, I did one for them also. So that also expands my reach. I probably have to figure out the math on that, if all the time and energy and food costs that I put into those auctions, if I'm getting residual from that, but also it's the donation that's important to me also to those organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is so many things to take into consideration for being a business owner. I mean, one thing, you're the talent, you know, you're the expert in what you do. And in addition to that, you have to market yourself. And I definitely understand that. I think that for some of us, especially for creatives, it's just easier to kind of be in our little corner, in your case, your kitchen, and, you know, do the whole thing, enjoy the artistry of making food. And then it's another thing to have to put it out there and talk about it. And, you know, it's hard to talk about something that, in my opinion, like, you spend a lot of like alone time, in a sense, like you're spending all this time making this food. To articulate it, I feel like it's just a whole different skill set, I think, to talk about that experience, because it's a very, you know, important, you know, passionate thing that you do. Am I kind of making sense there?
No, it's a very personal event. So then like maybe there's something that I'm very proud of. Well, now with marketing, you have to capture a picture of that dish or that meal. I went to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society auction winner's dinner the other night. I put on the dinner. for a family that bid on it and won it. And that dinner was probably one of my favorite dinners I've done. They were very personable. The dad was Navy retired. Now he was an endodontist, I think, successful. So we had a connection immediately when I got there. The wife was very friendly and enthusiastic about the dishes that I had and the pairings. And then their guests really loved the meal. And then at the end of the night, I got to meet their four working dogs. So they had four purebred dogs of different species, big dogs. And they all came in. They were friendly. And I'm a dog person. So it was just the whole night was great.
Mm-hmm.
And so that joy is hard to capture in a picture, for sure. And so trying to do that, you miss the mark. At least I do quite often.
Yeah. I think about just growing up and how I always felt like my mom treated my siblings and I like a zoo animal and like just taking candid photos of us. And so even for me personally, it's really hard to like want to capture the moment. Because I just think like, oh, it's not really the moment anymore when you like try to capture it. You know, it's called in the moment for a reason. Like unless
right.
you have unless you have like a videographer or like a photographer, like a professional photographer, like catching this, like you said, it's hard to catch. And I think that, you know, marketing in itself is an art to try to like transfer that level of enthusiasm into a photo or a video.
And I guess that's why we hire and pay people to do that.
Yeah. So shout out to the marketers,
yes.
or podcasters like me.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Jimmy. No. So what I'm hearing is that for you, marketing, it's one of the a little more difficult things for you to do as a business owner. But either way, it sounds like you do it anyway. You know, like you kind of put on that extrovert hat on and put yourself out there and start, you know, like focus on things that you're comfortable with, like locally. And also, I think, Jimmy, that like your expertise speaks for itself, because like you said, your number one way you gain interest is via word of mouth. And so I want to hear a little bit more about your expertise. I know that in addition to the process of cooking, like the phrase, the devil is in the details, is really important to you. And one of the things that you take a lot of pride in is your knowledge in the parts of a recipe that's not often spoken about. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So if you follow a recipe, and this has taken me a long time to learn this. Like when you follow a recipe, there's a ton of things that aren't in it. And what that is basically just the chef or the cook's experience, right? So they don't talk about how to not burn the oil in the pan, or how to preheat a pan, or how to cook or how to cut a certain piece of meat so it's the most tender, or how hot things need to be when they're done being cooked. Like there's all these little things that a chef needs to know about. And it's taken me a lot of time to learn that. And to be honest, like I'm always learning, right? There's always more to learn. And there's always that little bit of doubt that maybe you have when you're cooking something new or cooking something for a new client. Like I cooked for a new client yesterday and they were very particular, right? And I was admittedly a little bit nervous about cooking for them. Everything turned out great. They're happy with the food, as it usually does turn out well. So that went fine. It's interesting when you talk about expertise, the two times that I really felt like, oh, I do have expertise is when I applied for some Hollywood cooking shows.
Ooh.
And the interview process for those are pretty involved. Like I applied for Dan Levy's The Big Brunch is what it was called. And then I applied for another one also. And the packages they send you to fill out these questions and send in little video clips for these questions and then a long video of yourself talking. You know, I had so many good answers for the questions and then for the videos and talking about food and cooking and my experience. I was like, wow, I do have some knowledge and I do have a lot of experience. But that was a couple years ago. And it really, you know, I didn't get accepted into those TV programs, but it really boosted my confidence on being able to talk about food and talk about international food, which is my favorite thing to cook, foreign food. So it was really rewarding to go through those processes and learn that, I do have some experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's experiences like that, as you say, that help you realize how knowledgeable you really are. You know, very often I've been, podcasting since 2019, and I don't think what I do is anything special. But then once people start asking me about my process and I really get into it, they're like, oh, well, you should create a course on that. You should consult for that. And I'm like, trust me, like if I cared to create a business model around consulting, I would. But like, I'm more of a practitioner, more so than I am a teacher,
right?
You know, and I just enjoy the act of doing it more so than like making itself become like a business opportunity, I guess. But also, thank you. You know, it's like, thanks for recognizing that I guess I'm good at what I do and I know what I'm doing and all the things. So it takes like moments like that, you know, and in your case, it was filling out these applications to recognize, you know, that you really are a chef, Jimmy.
Right.
You're a professional chef, yeah. Even if you haven't been on TV.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. Well, you know, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, Jimmy, is, you know, one thing that really stood out to me in our offline conversation was just the level of support you have, you know, level of support to be able to do Flights by Jimmy. And I know in this case, it's your wife. So can you talk a little bit about what it's been like to, you know, have her support so that you can have this, you know, this flexibility of a business and while also still being able to, you know, be there for your kids?
You know, I became a private chef partly because, oh, I can control the schedule, right? Uh-huh. I need something I can control. Well, as it turns out, my wife can almost control her schedule. She's in pharmaceuticals more than mine. Like often I am cooking in the late afternoon into the evening, and she completely manages our families, our kids' hectic schedule after school with activities, sports mostly. And she will even put her job on hold, you know, so I can go to an event or go cook for a client, things like that. So yeah, she's the one that enables my schedule more so than the opposite of that. So without that support, I couldn't have the freedom. I wouldn't have the freedom to do what I'm doing. Also, she's helped me a lot with the, like basically we redid our kitchen. Okay. And so now I have everything that I need in my at-home kitchen, and she bankrolled that, which is a big deal. So she supported me with that. She is very wise when it comes to business. So we talk a lot about what I do. She motivates me big time. She's much more into social media than I am. So she helps me with that. Also gives me critiques, you know, good and bad, on what I'm doing marketing. And all of that, it can be hard coming from your spouse, but I try to be patient and try to be accepting and open-minded when it comes to all those inputs. But yeah, I definitely could not be doing what I'm doing without her being a major part of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's just beautiful to hear. And I think a good lesson for anyone who wants to get into business is recognizing what you already have. And in this case, it's a very loving support system, you know, from your family and from your wife specifically. And I just wanted to highlight that because I feel like when people think about getting into business for the first time, they want to be self-made. They want to say, I did it all. I did all this. But what I've come to find being self-employed for 13 years is that like, I will never be self-made. I will always make it a point to credit, like, you know, the shoulders of giants I was able to stand on or working with my husband. So I just think that it's, you know, it's a beautiful and loving thing for you to, you know, just give your wife a shout out.
Absolutely. My wife, Nora, thank you so much. I love you.
I didn't pay him to say that. No, I'm kidding. You're like, okay, cool. Now wife still loves me. No, I'm kidding. Awesome. Well, you know, Jimmy, I really enjoyed our conversation today. I want to make sure that you have shared everything you want to share to our listeners. So any final closing thoughts for us?
I just want people to know how proud I am of all our men and women overseas and anyone who signs up to be in the service. Yeah, I'm just super happy to have been a part of that. And to be honest, I would recommend it to anyone. It completely changes your life and your outlook on life. It will be one of the most important experiences of my life for as long as I live. Definitely.
Yeah. And once again, congratulations, 10 years of retirement at this point. Just must be so wild to think that you had this, you know, I don't know if you take that box from the shelf every now and then and open it up and reminisce, but I imagine it's just must be a very interesting, you know, time of reflection to recognize that your life is complete 180. Although there are a lot of the skills that you transferred into what you do today, it's still a very much a complete 180 from, you know, your military life.
Yeah, we're pretty close to Miramar Marine Corps Air Station. And when their C-130s fly overhead, and I'm outside with my kids, I'll be like, hey, do you guys hear that? What is that? And they're like, Dad, it's a C-130. So yeah, I open the box often.
You're like, don't forget, flights by Jimmy.
Right.
Awesome. Well, Jimmy, I just want to thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here today. And, you know, to our listeners, we hope you got a lot out of this conversation. And with that, we'll chat with you in the next episode. Tune in next time.
Thank you so much, Jen. Have a great day.
Hey, this is your host, Jen Amos. Thanks again for listening to today's episode of Holding Down the Fort by US Vet Wealth. Visit holdingdownthefortpodcast.com to access the full show notes of this episode, including resources mentioned and bonus content. Once again, that's holdingdownthefortpodcast.com. Lastly, stay after this outro music for something a little extra. Thanks again and chat soon. Bye for now. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome for sticking around in the post commentary. Once again, this is Jen Amos, your host here at Holding Down the Fort by US Vet Wealth. And if this is the first episode you are listening to, welcome. So glad to have you join us. I want to tell you a little bit about our show. And if there's any other episode you want to listen to, I highly encourage you listen to the trailer episode, episode 179, the episode that came before this one. I really give you a quick rundown of what to expect on the show. Every Mondays, we're going to be releasing an episode featuring a guest from the Services CEO program from the Rosie Network. So thank you, Rosie Network, for this incredible partnership to feature motivational stories from your cohort members. And also, every Thursdays now, what you'll be hearing in this Thursday's episode is we'll be featuring replays of the live show my husband runs with our partner, Mike Wallace from Blue Water Advisors. They talk a lot about employment opportunities in post-military life. The keyword they love to use and prefer to use is career progression. And you'll be able to hear more about that. If you did enjoy this episode, I hope that you'll subscribe. Also, if you want more content between now and Thursday, you're like, wow, this is amazing. Yes, I'll listen to the trailer, or I already did, and I want more. We have a free portal. The website to get access to this free portal is called holdingdownthefortpodcast.com/portal. You get access to our private podcast, which is called Inside the Fort, where you can learn more about me and my candid commentary on the journey of entrepreneurship and podcasting, and potentially bonus content from our guests should they feel compelled to sharing anything additional after their interview. That'll all be available inside the fort, AKA our free portal. Thank you so much for being here. On occasion, this post commentary will give extra backstory onto how I produce a show or and just any lingering thoughts I may have about the guests. But for now, just want to say hello. You know, thank you for listening to this episode. I hope that you'll stick around for the upcoming stories and my commentaries. So thanks so much, and we'll chat with you soon. Bye for now.